This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I want to get to, after Laura's news, traffic and weather, and reminder, we'll get to playing politics bottom of the hour, this report that came out earlier this week about the U.S. Customs and Border Protection officials now searching electronic devices. Flesh that out and see how far people are willing to go. How far do you want to take this? What are you willing to do? Where is the protection? Unless there is suspicion. For some, it's like, look through everything. For others, it's like, wait a second. What exactly is that going to open up? But as we finished up with Jason last hour, I raised the topic after Jason brought it up, because we were talking about, you know, the success that electronic pull tabs are having with U.S. Bank stating and the amount of money, and that the smokers aren't getting penalized. Maybe the corporate tax won't either, and potentially saving a lot of money and paying this off sooner. And it got us into the conversation, which will pass sooner in this state and which do you want to pass sooner in this state, legalize gambling or legalize marijuana? Dave, we're seeing a wave of many states, right, where it is recreational, and varying different reports, right? Many people just entrench where they are, right? I'm for it. Makes sense. Others, it's ridiculous. Why would we do it? Does seem to be there's no denying the poll numbers are moving for more and more. And then it's picking and choosing the data that you want to look at in these states, because clearly revenue has been there. Not as much as some projected. Some are taking a look at some of the driving data and suggesting there is a greater problem. To act like right now you don't have people literally right now who are listening to us who are driving high. I mean, yes, you do, right? To be honest,
of course, yes.
You need to be high to listen to this show.
It helps.
It does help. It helps you get by, right? The time moves quicker. I just think we're so far down the line, and now that you have a governor who it was nowhere near the top of his list, but saying I'm for it, and that you do have a combination of a libertarian streak, not just in Republicans but Democrats, and also it is more of a shrinking Republican social morality group. Mm-hmm. Those individuals, just to be honest, to be brutal, are dying away. We have still people who, you know, in their 20s and 30s, who believe in those type of principles. But compared to 30, 40 years ago, people in that area who are emphasizing, you know, stay in the marriage, church, alcohol, sin, the numbers have dropped. So I think marijuana definitely will come first. I do not think it's happening this first year. I do believe it's happening within the Walz administration. I don't think we have any idea how you're going to pull this off with the pact that we have with the Native Americans in this state.
Yeah.
You know? And are you going to have to work in tandem with them? And is that the only alternative? Can you offer up – what else can you offer – the Native Americans as an incentive, and why would they want to give up that monopoly at this point?
Well, there's very little reason they would, unless the money coming back to them is pretty darn good. But yeah, we have a political party, you know, the legalized cannabis now party, for heaven's sake.
So we have two of them.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Two
yeah, we
of
have
them.
Two.
5%
we
or
have
more.
Two. You're right. So I think the momentum is, you know, if you're going to compare the two, it's head and shoulders
right
behind a marijuana legalization as opposed to gambling. I think there's a certain sect of people, you know, those that are, you know, really into sports and like going to Vegas a couple times a year to lay down a bet. But I think most people are kind of like what DeRush said. Yeah, I mean, if there's a sports book downtown, I might pop in once in a while.
Yep.
But if I don't, whatever.
So is it, for a lot of people, it's going to depend. Is it like an OTB sort of situation? It's just one of these corner places where you're going in. Or is it a big casino where gambling is a part of it? Guess what? Here, some couple great restaurants, mm-hmm. some good shows, and that's going to bring more people down, right? Because I think that if all of a sudden just in downtown you got two or three places and there are smaller places just to gamble, I mean, what totally changes it is I grab my phone right here, right?
Exactly.
Right. Once you're able to do this and not only bet on games, but bet within games, mm-hmm. the whole world turns upside down.
Absolutely.
Right? And we're still a ways away from that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if you compare the two, whether it's, you know, your local little gambling shop in the, on the corner of downtown, or if you, you know, build a big sports gambling Taj Mahal or add, you know, a large sports book area to casinos that are existing, I think that's the way to go about it. Because I think, you know, if it's still just your little mom and pop, hey, we got yeah. a bookie shop over here, there's still a stigma there. If it's, you know, see, you know, might be seen as kind of dirty, a little, you know, a little shady, versus if you, you know, if you build it up and do it right, then it's, I guess, just seen as more of an upstanding, and yeah, where everybody's okay with this kind of thing.
Among the texts, gambling all day, marijuana, gambling for chumps. Marijuana, my husband qualifies for now, but can't afford the cost involved to get it cash only. Cheaper to use our own local medicine, man. Yeah, many people have done that. Thousands of people die in alcohol-related car crashes every year, but nobody complains about that. Okay, let's stop there. People talk about that.
A lot of complaining is done, but
endlessly.
Numbers don't lie.
And we've also watched an enormous change in that area. Back to the same text, people driving under cannabis are all on the road right now as we speak. That's true, but to act like we wouldn't have more people out there is naive. Mm-hmm. I'm in favor of both, but I'll say again, as I said many times, it's such an amazing cash opportunity for the smart scientists and the others to try to come up with a system that measures your THC level, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not that you smoked 4 days ago and you're driving, it doesn't affect you, but currently, once that is available, that is going to be another thing that's going to change a lot of this going forward. Okay, how far do we want to go in protecting our country, ourselves, our society regarding electronic devices? Story the other day about U.S. border, customs and border protection officials, what they're doing. How far do we want to take that? This one out of New York, U.S. Customs and Border Protection officials are searching electronic devices of travelers more often. They also did not always follow proper protocol, a new watchdog group reported. The report came out just yesterday, found there were 29,000 devices searched at a port of entry out of 400 million travelers U.S., in 2017, that was up from 18,000 the year before when they had about 10 million fewer travelers. So again, the report made public points out that of the 397 million travelers, this was up 18,000 from the year before. Customs Border Protection officials note it is less than 1% of all travelers. Officers are allowed under law to look through devices of travelers who are referred to for a secondary inspection. During the primary inspection, travel documents and passports are reviewed. If a secondary inspection is needed, officers may search devices like phones, thumb drives, and computers to determine admissibility. So looking at the law and how this came into place, the Supreme Court decided in 76 and 04 that people have fewer claims to Fourth Amendment privacy rights granted by the Constitution when entering the country because the government has to protect its borders. While the court has ruled that police cannot search people's phones inside the country without a warrant because they contain troves of personal information, it hasn't yet been decided on a case about phone searches at the border. All right, Dave, philosophically, and texters and callers, 651-989-9226, 651-989-9226, or 81807. Are we comfortable with this? You're entering the country. You're not a citizen of the country. Do you have that same protection as you and I do regarding what we're looking for? Because for me, you don't. And I want to make sure this is fairly narrow. I want to see how we're arriving at this on a consistent within this narrow frame of the law. But in this area, I think there are different areas. There are different ways to interpret it because I am far from the person who says, while I'm living here, that police should have the right to check my phone, come through my house, pull me over. Because you still have a huge portion of the population, David, says, I haven't done anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
What do I care?
Nothing to hide. Go ahead.
No way am I for that. And that doesn't mean I'm running stuff here. But come on, there has to be a presumption. There has to be reason. We've had Joe Freberg on endlessly on many topics. And Joe points out, if you want to get a hold of a judge and you want to get a warrant, he says it's that quick.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, can they find judges who will do this too fast? Probably so. But no, I think there is a large difference, and we're going to so many different areas of technology, too. I mean, you go to the airport now, you know, you've watched some of these reports the last couple of weeks about more airlines going just to facial recognition.
Yep.
We've had the different ways to speed through the line for years and years. We're seeing more of that. So where are you at here with phones and what we check and what we can't check?
For, you know, common everyday citizen, I'm like you. I very much would prefer that none of my things get checked. It's a privacy thing, whether you have something to hide or not. It's a barrier that I don't think should be crossed. But I mean, if you're talking about people who aren't citizens coming into the country, yeah, I think I agree with you. I don't think there's that same line of protection or you know, a reasonable right to privacy.
Yeah.
If you're not a citizen of the country, because I mean, let's be honest, most people aren't threats. But there are threats out there.
Yes. And you know, listen, President Bush said it a lot. I have no idea if he was the first one who pointed this out in the weeks and months and years after 9/11, you know, when he said we have to be right every single time. Someone else has to be right one time. Look what happened in Paris.
Yeah.
You know, last night. Looking more at some of the data here. And we'll take phone calls and texts here, too. 651-989-9226, 81807. The Office of the Inspector General for Homeland Security found some searches were not properly documented and data was not properly secured. Some of the devices searched were not taken offline in violation of procedures that say officers can search the physical device, but not what's on the traveler's cloud network. Homeland Security is obviously in charge of this. In addition, in some of the cases under a pilot program, officers can do an advanced search, which means a specially trained officer downloads information. But the system wasn't maintained properly, and some information copied to thumb drives was not deleted. Where do we stand on this on the cloud, right? Because if they're saying here, in violation of procedures that say officers can search the physical device, but not what's on a traveler's cloud network. First of all, I would have no – if they said, where's your cloud? I'm like, I know I've got stuff there. Where? And I hope it's there when I switch my, you know, devices. But if we've decided that you don't have that same presumption of privacy, that you don't have that same constitutional protections, and I can look at your phone, should the cloud be any different?
I wouldn't think so.
I wouldn't think so at all.
No, if you're coming into this country and your intent is to do harm and you know what the laws are in the country as far as what can be searched, what can't be searched when you're coming in, you're probably then going to be smart enough.
Right.
If the rule is you can search the physical device but not the cloud, to, you know, have whatever you have in the cloud. And, you know, it just, like you said with President Bush, saying it just takes one. So if, God forbid, that one happened and we're able to go back and find out who perpetrated some sort of heinous act and find whatever you find on his devices or access the cloud and see what, you know, he or she had saved or, you know, well, then the outrage and the uproar is going to be tremendous. Yeah, obviously.
Correct. Now, read more from a story I found, too. Should you ask for a lawyer? U.S. citizens and green card holders have the right to request an attorney. It's not clear at all whether the government has been requesting, respecting the request to the extent that it should. Now, that's a major problem, right? Mm-hmm. If you're a U.S. citizen and you are coming back in and you are asking for a lawyer to give you protection at this point, and they are not granting those, that would be a major, major problem. There's another part here that I want to get to. What about confidential files, right? Because they point out, as an example, lawyers, medical professionals, and journalists can say they have privileged confidential files. There is no guarantee agents will recognize that as a deterrent. The folks involved recognize that lawyers in particular have attorney-client privileges and that agents have to get approval from an agency attorney before proceeding with the search. So, I mean, it's pretty interesting on some of these other professions on how it works out that way.
Yeah, and we can talk about, you know, people coming into this country searching, you know, their devices, whatever. What if the shoe's on the other foot? What if Chad's taking a trip to Beirut and you go to the airport?
Lovely this time.
Yeah, and they say, Chad, step on over here. Let's take out your phone, take out your laptop, your tablet. We have to take a look. Are you going to feel it's there right at that point? Because, I mean, I kind of put the shoe on the other foot and think.
100%, right?
I'd be a little bitter.
I would be, but let's say you've traveled that far. How many people are that principled if you're not hiding something illegal?
Mm-hmm.
God knows if they saw Adam's phone.
Oof,
they'd be there for a while.
Ugh.
They'd need a shower afterwards.
And keep the phone.
Yeah, exactly. What a disgusting person this guy is. But am I that principled enough to say? I mean, I would hope I would have put in the research on this, but it's very plausible I didn't. So my gut instinct tells me today.
I think I'd still feel just a little bit violated. There's nothing that anyone's going to find that's going to implicate me or anything. You know, there's nothing that anyone's going to find interesting. But
think about the circumstances here, right? Okay, you're there, let's say, with your family. You've traveled so far. That's one thing. And everybody in the family's like, are you kidding me? Here's the phone. Let's go.
Yeah.
Versus you're there for work, and work has sent you there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not your own choice, and now you have to turn everything over. My reluctance would be a lot stronger on that. Am I willing to be so tied to this is my belief and I'm not going to do it? I don't know yet what I would do. I would fight a tooth and nail here, mm-hmm. right? But if I'm traveling somewhere else, that is a very good question. Let's do this. Let's pause on that question on what is taking place with now more of U.S. Border and Customs looking at this, with the further advancements that we're seeing with airlines on facial recognition, how much information are you willing to turn over at the airport as you travel, as you enter the country, as you enter another country? What is fair for U.S. citizens? What is fair for non-U.S. citizens? And what is fair for you when you travel somewhere else? I want to get a bunch of calls and texts on this before we get to plain politics. We have a few minutes when we come back. 81807. Again, 81807. Or a phone call. You can call in right now. 651-989-9226. That could be my next job. Here he, ringing the bell. You got to ring a bell when you do that, right?
Oh, need the bell.
Seems like you need to be hunched over, too.
I get it very different. I think it's straight back. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Big, strong guy. I think of kind of an older gentleman, wise, but a bit grizzled through the years, ringing the bell, but a very distinctive voice about it.
See, I don't necessarily think old. I think just, you know, maybe a little broad-shouldered, probably a little portly.
Mm.
A little portly, but
wow,
yeah, you ring the bell.
Now.
Hear ye, I've got things to say.
Mm. Could be a side gig for you.
Well, are you calling me fat?
No, no. Bang the microphone, though, that you're so into. now, here's the part where it is involving American citizens, though, right? Some of the same numbers, because here's a Washington Post story from early in the year. American citizens and other travelers have expressed astonishment and alarm in recent years at requests to hand over their cell phones from U.S. customs officials at airports and border crossing. The agency said sometimes needs information obtained from devices to determine the admissibility of foreign visitors, viewing them as potential sources of intelligence on terrorism. Under the new guidelines, travelers who are selected by officers for additional screening could be asked to unlock this. So they are saying in some of these cases, these are American citizens who are coming back into the country. And they also are being asked, which is very, very different from within the confines, you're already there. Mm-hmm. How? Okay, so because I was wrestling with the idea how comfortable I would feel if I was traveling somewhere else. How comfortable are you now? You just traveled to Beirut. And you're coming back, and you live here in lovely Minnesota. And they're saying, hey, I know Dave Harrigan, you're a U.S. citizen. I got to go through your phone.
Don't like it.
Don't like it, but are you doing it?
I mean, in the end, probably, just because I don't want to stir anything up and I don't have anything to hide. But
and also, you'd like to get back in the country?
Exactly. I'd like to get back to country. I'd like to just get this over with and get home. You know, if it's not violating me physically, I'll probably, you know, okay, fine, take the phone,
right.
Do what you got to do, you know, open up Twitter, see everything you got. Yeah,
yeah.
I don't tweet much, okay?
Right. And I understand we're in a different world than we were before.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of us would be astonished if we're the ones coming back and for some reason something has tipped them off and they're saying, okay, Mr. Hartman, Mr. Harrigan, we need your laptop. We need your phone. Now we're going to screen it again.
Yeah.
But give us your code and we're going through it. How many of us are going to say, I've been traveling, I want to get back? No way. You cannot do that and start to try to attempt to challenge that when so far it's been upheld.
Yeah. And they can, you know, even if they call it, say it's a random search and you just happen to be a lucky number, whatever, are you going to believe that it's random? Is it something to be something in the back of your mind thinking, what if it wasn't random?
Yeah.
What if they're thinking something, thinking I'm someone I'm not? And, you know, your mind will just go.
Among the texts here, Americans are a bunch of crybabies. If they stand in line and go through metal detectors, we should have just as strict policies as the other countries. Same with immigration. I don't have any problem with going through lines, but also have a problem if we're going to change the idea of presumption of innocence, right? That is a very different sort of situation. The problem with sharing with info with other countries is likely to turn that back info into the U.S., regardless if you do anything bad. I'm not convinced of that, but I know many people are. More text here. There's a difference between rights and privileges inside the country. You assume to be a citizen and have these rights against illegal searches, but we're pointing out here in more stories that U.S. citizens themselves trying to get back are facing some of these same restrictions. It's 33 past 1, playing politics after traffic and weather on CCO.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
We always have plenty of material. This partnership between the Star Tribune editorial board and WCCO Radio. Patricia Lopez and John Rash from the Star Tribune, Chad Hartman here, WCCO. It was a must-see TV, Pat, yesterday when the president clearly set this up.
Mm-hmm.
And the president felt, I'm TV, I get TV,
right.
This is an issue I know, I'm going to look good, Chuck and Nancy aren't going to look
bad,
as good.
Right.
For 15 minutes, I think it was at minimum a TKO. And it was rather stunning to watch. We've had some fun with Mike Pence and how uncomfortable the vice president was. But what was your overview? And was this a bit of a preview of what the next 2 years will be like with the president and the Democrats?
It could be. I think, the biggest takeaway was that this was another unforced error on the part of the president. All he had to do was do a little photo op with the new leaders and, preview the upcoming negotiations, which I think is all they thought was going to happen. Usually,
yes,
you know, with previous presidents, they do something like this. They have a few pleasantries and then they turn off the cameras. They, take the reporters out of the room and then they get down to business.
And Pelosi and Schumer said that multiple times.
Right. Because they're both old hands at this and they've been through it many times. Although I will say I noticed that Pelosi kind of teed it up by talking about the Trump shutdown. And I think that just immediately got in the president's head And because he was focused on that.
Don't steal my game.
Right.
I'm
right.
The brander, not you.
I own this. Yeah. And you know what? I'd be proud to do a shutdown, which I'm sure at which point his staff is like, oh, gosh.
Right.
And it just deteriorated from there. It was an extraordinary spectacle to see the three of them, you know, coming pretty close to yelling at one another.
Yep.
Let's hope it's not the next 2 years. But I think, you know, the president certainly, hopefully, is rethinking his strategy for dealing with a newly empowered Democratic Party.
All right, John, we're at this point where the figure they're offering is a huge amount. It's $1.3 billion. The president is demanding $5 billion. Mm-hmm. There was this point when I think there was this other country that was going to pay for this. I think I heard that once or twice during the campaign. That never comes up. What do you think is going to happen? Will either side blink on this, or are we headed for a shutdown?
Well, you're quite right, Chad, that it is a huge amount of money to you and I and Patricia and all of our listeners out there. Relative to the federal government, neither figure is that significant.
Correct.
To shut down the federal government, and indeed they'll incur far more cost if this goes on beyond a day or two in terms of shutting down the government. So I think that they'll come to some kind of compromise figure, and perhaps more profoundly, some kind of compromise language, that it's for border security as opposed to the wall. And I think that that'll be something that both the Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, as well as the incoming likely Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, will insist upon. And speaking of Ms. Pelosi, I think certainly, you know, she has had quite a challenging time, something the president himself alluded to in terms of the upcoming vote to see who's going to be the next speaker.
Yeah,
she probably did herself a lot of favors yesterday in terms of, you know, how she managed that meeting, how both her and Senator Schumer were able to, in some effect, goad the president into saying that he would own the shutdown, which takes away talking points that many of the Republicans had planned to have. So it, in the question that you had discussed with Patricia, certainly it could be a preview of the next 2 years, although I don't necessarily think it'll be a tactic of the next 2 years, because it seemingly has not worked for the president this time.
Patricia, let me phrase it this way. Mm. At one point last year, well reported, Chuck Schumer went to the president immigration deal with a lot, which included well over $20 billion for wall security. Mm-hmm. So he's put that out there. We've had Democrats other times who felt like not the length of the wall that the president suggested, but have said there are parts where a wall would help. Should the Democrats move a little bit further on this one if they can get a broader package? And does that get the president to move a little bit?
I don't know that a broader package is on the table. If it were to be part of comprehensive immigration reform, yes, there is a place for that. I would say not for a wall, because I don't know of many Democrats who have actually advocated for the wall, per se.
Although Schumer's money last year, a huge amount of that was for the wall.
For border security, that could be fencing. It could be, you know, things that look like a wall.
It's almost the word has to be part of it.
Exactly.
Right?
You know, words matter. Branding matters. So the Democrats cannot afford to be seen caving in on the wall to the president. Neither can the president walk away from his signature issue.
Right.
The interesting thing to me about this particular shutdown threat is that 80% of the government has already been funded. So they've taken care of that.
Mm-hmm.
There are specific areas that are left, you know, between 20 and 25%. Department of Justice, Homeland Security. Not really at the top of Democrats' list.
Yep.
You know, oh, ICE might run out of money. That's too darn bad.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, the president has been sort of maneuvered into a bit of a corner where he has more at stake in this. I mean, he's the one who really wants to see, you know, a Justice Department with a new attorney general fully funded, who wants to see full funding for Homeland Security. They will have to find some kind of compromise. Might there be a brief shutdown? There might be, because there's just not – it's not like it would be a full shutdown of the entire government. This would be one of the smaller ones we've ever been through.
John, I thought another interesting part yesterday was when Nancy Pelosi, the soon-to-be speaker, because there's a report today saying the deal she has struck, that the leadership will all be limited to three terms, and then if it goes further, they'll have to get two-thirds vote. Instead of getting the majority right now.
Mm-hmm.
But when she's saying to the president, put it out there, let the House vote, And the president saying, I've got that, no problem. Paul Ryan has admitted on the $5 billion for the wall right now, he doesn't have the Republicans.
She kept correcting him through their little.
And,
yeah.
And on this one, she's right using Paul Ryan's own words, John.
Indeed, she is. And it's going to get far worse for the president, which is something he clearly knows, about January 20th or so when the new Congress takes its seat in. Of course, it has a Democratic majority at that point after 40, perhaps soon to be 41 seats were picked up by the Democrats in the midterm election. So, you know, he's not going to be able to get through this through the House, which is why he's pressing and pushing so hard here in the lame duck session. But if they don't do it, one could see a scenario where the government stays shut down, at least perhaps until the new Congress comes in, and perhaps till some of these compromises that you're talking to Patricia about could be bandied about. But it's not going to necessarily be easy. And as you say, you know, he backed himself to some degree into a rhetorical corner yesterday, particularly because this was his signature issue. And it's quite striking that this was his signature campaign issue. He keeps returning to it. And yet in some ways, by any objective standard, it has to be judged a failure, because part of the issue was not only that he would build a wall, but of course that Mexico would pay for it.
Not a penny.
And reportedly, he briefly spoke, you know, afterwards off camera about he was going to get Mexico to pay for it. And most experts say the way that he floated clearly won't work at that point. And the Mexican government has absolutely no interest in taking part of this.
The bottom line is the Democrats can afford to walk away for a little bit. He really can't. If he couldn't get his border wall through a Republican-dominated Congress, he's not going to get it through a Democratic House.
No.
So he needs this next 2 weeks to close a deal.
Okay, let's talk Chief of Staff. I'll start with you, John. Kellyanne Conway saying today that John Kelly's on board at least until January 2nd. It's been reported for months and months that Kelly and Trump had a falling out, now saying they hadn't talked in weeks and weeks. All the reporting was that Nick Ayers, the vice president's chief of staff, was going to take over. And then maybe, as usual, the president got ahead of himself by announcing last Friday General Kelly's out. And then over the weekend, Nick Ayers said, that's so good. That's okay. Mm-hmm. I'm going back to Georgia. He's a very wealthy, successful person. He's still going to work for, I think, a PAC supporting the president. But is this a unique situation here where it appears the president is searching for a chief of staff when, to a lot of people, that's like the second or third most important position in Washington, D.C.?
Not just unique, unprecedented in terms of, as you mentioned, second or third most important job there. If you do it, and especially if you do it successfully, you're set for life in Washington in terms of working for other organizations or moving on to a political career of your own, as Rahm Emanuel did in the latest example when he ran successfully for mayor of Chicago a few times. So it's quite striking that a young man, he's in his mid-30s here, with the job of a lifetime, would turn it down, decide to leave the administration. And perhaps that's an indication that even among very loyal administration figures, they realize just how turbulent these next 2 years are going to be.
Yeah, a lot of people think the first 2 years were pretty crazy? Mm-hmm. Wait until now.
Well, he's been through more chiefs of staff than any other president at this juncture in their term.
Now, the comeback is Obama, over 8 years, had what, five, I think? But this early, it's a pretty big turnover, you know?
And it's turnover throughout the administration. If you add them all up, it's
total,
not even close.
You're right, 100%.
And one of the extraordinary things about Nick Ayers is that, and he's an old Tim Pawlenty guy.
Yeah, right.
Known to be, even in a set that's quite ambitious, a very ambitious young man.
Yeah.
So to walk away from this kind of a plum position is really extraordinary.
As John said, at that age, opportunity is amazing.
But then you also have the incredible sight of people who are proactively letting the president know, no, I can't do it.
Yeah.
Don't even put me on the list. Mike Pompeo, you know, a number of other people who, how many times in the past have you heard people say, you know, well, if the president needs me, then of course I'm going to go do it. Yeah.
I'm available. I'm willing to leave. Dave's willing to join me.
Well, I hope you're lawyered up then.
That is correct.
Well, Patricia makes a very good point. Some people perhaps would be concerned that they would be in legal jeopardy because of so many people in the administration have had to deal
100%.
With the Mueller investigation. And, of course, you're going to have a House majority that's going to have investigatory powers and are going to use them as opposed to the Republican majority from that perspective. And then you also can't discount the extraordinarily well-publicized challenge of working for President Trump. When you think of, you know, the business that he ran, It, in effect, was a small family business, very, very, a tremendous amount of money going through it, but not a, you know, big corporate infrastructure like you're working at General Electric, as an example. And so, you know, he has a reputation as not listening to advice, or, you know, the way that, that he pushed back against General Kelly, who tried to bring order to the White House. That's not going to be an attractive job for some people who have options.
Here's a phrase that I've seen in a couple of stories already that I find particularly chilling as they're looking at, you know, other people that might be drafted into this position. There are references made to a family vetted shortlist.
Yeah.
Think about that. What, you know, this is
the
United States of America.
Ivanka and Jared, apparently.
And by that, they mean Ivanka and Jared and possibly Donald J. Trump, but or Trump Jr.
Yeah.
But I think mainly those two. So we have this extraordinary sight of the richest, most powerful, you know, nation in the world.
Yeah.
And it's these two, the children, the adult children, that are vetting for this incredibly important position that has only grown in power since Truman started it.
Sure.
The chief of staff is now considered an integral part of, you know, the president's operation and how you run what is now an enormous staff.
All right. We got about 2 minutes here. We had a poll from Patricia, MoveOn.org, Beto O'Rourke, big lead on everybody.
Yes.
Okay? Joe Biden second.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Biden taking time, by all accounts, next couple weeks with his family to decide early next year if he's running.
Mm-hmm.
What's more significant, Joe Biden thinking about running or Beto O'Rourke with a significant lead here in December of 18?
Well, I mean, it's important to remember that this is MoveOn.org.
Yep.
So that's a very particular slice of the electorate.
Yeah, further left part of the Democratic Party.
What I found more notable was that Bernie Sanders, the previous darling of MoveOn.org, fell to third in this poll, eclipsed by establishment, politician Joe Biden, and then upstart newcomer Beto O'Rourke. So to me, that says that there's something different going on in the progressive movements. They're obviously, you know, Beto O'Rourke's appeal, even though he narrowly lost his election, is undeniable. And they are looking for those kind of, you know, Obama-like qualities of charisma and someone who can really galvanize voters and excite them.
Yep.
And that's it's not going to be Bernie Sanders.
No. John?
I concur with Patricia, you know, especially regarding the characterization of MoveOn.org. But I think that, you know, to the degree that it's looking at the nation, that's one thing. It cannot be forgotten that this begins in Iowa, moves to New Hampshire, particularly with the caucus system down in Iowa. I would not underestimate our home state senator, Amy Klobuchar, should she jump into the race. Beyond the fact that, you know, she's from a neighboring state, her Midwestern approach and appeal are something that may play very, very well down there. And if you are in the top three, you know, many people project in Iowa, you're certainly going to move on to New Hampshire, and there'll be a great culling of candidates after those caucuses. But I wouldn't be surprised if she's one of them who does move on.
Great stuff. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
John Rash, Patricia Lopez, Star Tribune here on WCCO. All right, we're short here, but we have plenty more coming up next hour, including we're going to talk about how cash flush the stadium funding is when you realize that started out disastrous. What does that mean? Al Lund has joined us a number of times before, so Al's with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.